Coming up, Microsoft reorganizes again. Elon Musk blew up the HoloLens. And is Microsoft a hardware company? It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Episode 420, recorded on July 1st, 2015. Satya Nadella is Batman. This episode of Windows Weekly is brought to you by Harry's. For guys who want a great shave experience for a fraction of what you're paying now, go to harrys.com. Get $5 off your first purchase by entering the code WINDOWS when you check out. And by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 100-plus job sites, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter with a free 4-day trial now at ZipRecruiter.com/Windows. It's time for Windows Weekly. Do you need your weekly dose of Microsoft goodness? Well, we've got it here for you. Unfortunately, Paul Thurrott is at a hot yoga boot camp today. But thankfully, the incomparable Mary Jo Foley is already a Bikram master. We've got Mary Jo Foley from the All About Microsoft blog over at ZDNet. Mary Jo, it's been a while since I've had a chance to share this stage with you. It's so good to talk to you.
Same here, Padre. And Paul at a yoga camp, I think he's more likely drinking Guinness somewhere.
That goes along with that. Well, yes. Hot links, hot yoga. It's all about the same. Now, Mary Jo, you have actually brought along a very interesting guest today. Can you introduce him?
I will. Today, filling in for Paul, we have Todd Bishop, who I've known, I don't know how many years.
More than we'd like to say, I think.
I know. Like me, he's a career Microsoft watcher, and he's also the co-founder and editor of GeekWire.
Which I just found out took over the old Penny Arcade offices in Seattle. Yep. So, wow, quite a lineage there to live up to.
That's right. We're in Robert Koo's former office, so we feel like we have to play pranks on each other at various moments of the day to live up to his legacy.
And you've told me that there's some sort of metallic alien device embedded in your floor that you're afraid to touch.
That's right. If folks watched PATV back in the day, they were always doing things with the walls and the ceilings and the floors. And we've got some remnant of that in our newsroom that we're afraid to touch.
Well, folks, it's July 1st. It's the start of the new fiscal year from Microsoft, which means we get to recap a lot of what's happened over the past year. Mary Jo Foley, do you want to lead us into this first story about Satya talking about where Microsoft has to go? Because obviously, things have changed over the last year. In fact, if we go back 18 months, you may not recognize today's Microsoft from the Microsoft of then.
Very true. And just like last summer, when Satya was still pretty new in the CEO role, this year he did another kind of reorg, like Microsoft typically does mid-year every year. And we talked about that on last week's show, where a bunch of people left. Stephen Elop left. He was the head of devices. Kirill Tatarinov left. He was the head of Dynamics. Eric Rutter, another really longtime Microsoft veteran who was heading up education and advanced technology, also out. And then typically what happens after Microsoft does a reorg like that is there's some adjustments, some kind of other lower level reorg things that happen, and sometimes layoffs. This year, when they announced the reorg, they didn't immediately announce any layoffs. But then Todd Bishop got a hold of an email that Satya sent to the troops a week after the reorg. And in that email, he talked about kind of what Microsoft's new mission statement is and a lot of feel good stuff. And then, by the way, guys, we have some tough choices to make ahead. So Todd probably wants to weigh in a little more on that since he found the email.
Yeah, the phrase tough choices has sort of become a little bit of a big mantra that people are looking at and perhaps reading too much into in some ways. I think that it was in part meant to say, hey, yeah, I know I've been talking about all this great stuff in this email, but the world is not perfect. And in fact, there will be some things that have to be cut. And I think we've started to see some of that. And I know we're going to talk about it in the show with the news about Bing this past week and the sale of some assets and Microsoft essentially exiting the display advertising business. And to me, that's the kind of issue that he was talking about there. I think people immediately jumped to the conclusion that it could also include bigger things like completely exiting Windows Phone. And I'm a little more skeptical about the possibility of it being something that drastic. I think he's more in the lines of making trims and making smaller, tough choices. I think a lot of the tough choices that will be made have already been made.
Let me ask something of the both of you. Now, as Mary Jo has mentioned, we've seen a lot of Microsoft reorgs. In fact, that's sort of become our thing. How are they going to reorg this year? And we've become accustomed to them saying they're going to reorg, and maybe they shift a couple of people around. Maybe they say they change their priorities. But on a whole, before Satya, it really didn't mean a lot. It was still kind of business as usual. The MO of Microsoft was still to throw a bunch of stuff against the wall, see what sticks, and then maybe develop that into a viable service and or product. Does this feel different to you? I mean, are you actually starting to see them act on the reorg recommendations, or are we starting to get to that point where we think, Microsoft is still a big company. It still has a lot of inertia. Maybe this reorg thing isn't as easy as just getting a dynamic CEO and having him tell the world this is not your parents' Microsoft.
Mm. Yeah, I think you're really starting to see a couple differences. And one thing is, and I think Nadella said this last fall when he was talking to a group of journalists. He said, you know what, we're going to be making fewer, bigger bets. And you're right. When Ballmer was there, it felt like, hey, let's try this. Let's try that. Let's buy a company. Let's buy a Quantiv. Let's buy,
Skype.
IKEA, right? Skype. Yeah, let's just see what happens, you know? And now it feels more like, you know what? We're a software and services company. And so let's kind of stick to our core strengths and kind of tighten up things a little bit. Yeah, we're going to stay in hardware, but we're going to use hardware as a showcase for software and services. We're not just going to be out there trying to be Apple, right? So I think that is a very big difference. And I really feel like you're feeling that impact right now at Microsoft. It's feeling like they are more cohesive to me.
Yeah, I think you saw Satya Nadella with the last two emails to the staff, essentially putting his stamp on the company officially and saying, okay, in 1 week, we're going to let these four executives go. They've decided to take another path. I think the departure of Mark Penn is actually very symbolically important. You know, Mark Penn was the architect of the Screwgold campaign, which was very controversial internally at Microsoft. There were many employees who thought that was essentially in bad taste. And so with moves like that, I think Satya is saying, here is my actual team. He's essentially getting rid of a lot of the folks who were left over and perhaps more unsavory from the Ballmer regime. I also have been hearing some inside whispers about some of the town meetings, the internal employee meetings that they had leading up to the announcement that Stephen Elop would be departing. And Elop, from what I've heard, faced some very difficult questions from employees about the fact that Microsoft does not or has not been investing or at least showing an investment in a real flagship Windows Phone beyond what they've had in the past. You know, the focus on lower cost emerging market devices, I think, has been very controversial inside the company. And that's the kind of tough choice that I think you're going to see them make, where they aren't going to be focusing as much on those low-end handsets. They're going to be shifting more toward premium handsets that are more in the line of showcasing Windows along the lines of what Satya has been talking about.
Wow, really?
Just real quickly, can we talk about the four big departures? Who's leaving and why, as you mentioned, is it symbolically important for these people to go? What do they take with them that needs to leave Microsoft?
Gosh, Mary Jo, you'd probably be better suited to do that one. I think it's obvious why Mark Penn left. I think he was just, I think he was a misfit with a lot of the culture, even initially. He's, you know, very much a Ballmer person. Yeah. Went to Harvard with Steve Ballmer.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Kirill, and I always struggle with his last name.
Mary Jo,
that seems to me like it's more of an indication of where Dynamics is headed as part of the company. Yeah. I mean, I
agree. There were a lot of rumors that Microsoft was considering selling off Dynamics, which is their CRM and ERP business. And then when all those rumors started happening earlier this year about them maybe buying Salesforce, everybody was like, whoa, wait a second. What now? What's going to happen to Dynamics if they buy Salesforce, right? Are they going to have yet another CRM platform? They already have four ERP platforms. Now are they going to have two CRM platforms? People were wondering what was going to happen to Dynamics, even though it's very much in with Microsoft's core mission, which is, you know, software and services and business software and productivity. People were just not quite sure because the way Microsoft had organized the Dynamics team was a little bit strange. The engineering leads all reported into Kirill, but marketing and sales were reporting into other places in the company, and there were all these dotted line representations of how the org was working. So people weren't quite sure. Now it's very clear. Dynamics sits under cloud and enterprise. So that's like, hey, they're here. They're part of the company. They're sticking around. So I think that was kind of a very clear indication about what was going on when they made that change.
Yeah. The other interesting departure is Eric Retter. You know, Eric Retter's been around forever, and he very much molded himself. He kind of felt, I don't know the right way to put this, but he modeled himself after Bill Gates in a lot of ways. And he had the harsh approach of Gates without the full complement of genius, if I could say that. Wow, I don't know. I don't mean that in such a harsh way, but he certainly modeled himself after Bill Gates. And so that to me was an interesting departure, especially after you saw Craig Mundy leave previously, and he was essentially in very much the same role. And I think one open question here is what becomes of Microsoft Research and its role inside the company with Eric Retter leaving and whether they're going to more tightly integrate some of those researchers and then perhaps even move some of them more into the development teams, which has been something they've done in the past, but not in a very organized or broad way.
Yeah, Richard B., who's listening, says on Twitter, don't forget Retter was Gates's TA, technical advisor.
Assistant,
technical assistant. Yeah. So he kind of was molding himself in Gates's image in a way too, but I agree with you. He had some other things going on with him.
I always got along with him. You know, I always had good conversations with him, but I don't know that he had the command of everything to the level that Gates had, which obviously would be very difficult and it's a very high bar.
One of the phrases that I've heard over and over is this idea of fewer, bigger bets. It was the more focused Microsoft. As you said, there's not going to be a bunch of acquisitions. They're not going to just willy-nilly spend their cash and their research on things that may or may not lead to products. They want to do the things that they think might be successful. Satya's already laid out his priorities. We know that they are software, services, cloud, and mobile. But how does that translate? I mean, Microsoft still has a lot of products, definitely not that fewer that they want, that are popular, that do make the company money, that do require continued development. I don't know how you could do fewer, bigger bets unless you're just talking about the new products and services and saying, well, we're going to support everything that we already have as is. Do you see them actually starting to consolidate products? As you said, putting together the ERP programs, maybe doing something with CRM. Or do you just say, okay, they're going to keep the moneymakers where they are, and they're going to spend their research on those future development product sectors?
I know it's a fine line, right? Because you want to invest in things that aren't yet here, like HoloLens, right? That's a good example where you're taking a bet on something that's not proven. You have to kind of be out there testing the waters, but you don't know if it's going to work. Is it going to be the next Google Glass or is it going to be the next Windows? You know, it's like, okay, let's see. Is it going to end up like Kinect where it's interesting and people are developing some apps for it, but it never really became a big kind of differentiator? Or is it going to be the next big differentiator? So even when you take fewer, bigger bets and you kind of consolidate down, you can't totally just say we're only betting on what we have. I think the difference again is Microsoft realizes the market is changing. You know, they're not even the Windows company anymore. Before it was like almost everything at Microsoft was centered around Windows or Office or Windows and Office. And now you see other parts of the company getting a lot more play and being the parts that they're betting on for the next billion dollar business. You know, the cloud stuff, apps for Android and iOS. I mean, that's a whole new business that they weren't in at all not that long ago. So I think they're doing different bets, taking chances in some places, but also always coming back to the core message, which is we're a productivity and platforms company, and we're going to be a cross-platform company now. But our strengths are software and services. They're not so much being, you know, a vendor of hardware. They're not so much being a search engine company, which we'll talk about in a minute when we talk about Bing. I think it's just a slightly different focus, but a key one. It's shaping the company in a different mold than it's been the past few years under Steve Ballmer.
You know, one of the things that Satya said in his mission statement, his re-envisioning, was this idea of reinventing productivity, reinventing what it means to be an office/enterprise product. And I don't know how you do that without having a lot of big bets. HoloLens, we didn't even know that they were researching it. The work that Microsoft is doing with Whitespace, with Spectrum, is something that could be huge for them. And I don't see them paring that down and at the same time being able to reinvent business productivity, because part of the process of doing that is playing with a lot of things that we don't know yet that we want or need. Todd, what about that? How do you reconcile the two? How do you do less and at the same time do more?
Yeah, one important thing to keep in mind is that when Satya Nadella is talking about productivity and reinventing productivity, he's actually talking about redefining it in a way that we wouldn't traditionally associate with business productivity. And one of the things that they've emphasized is that they're trying to bring the notion that everybody should be more productive in their lives and that, you know, machines should be acting on our behalf. Software should be intelligent and anticipating our needs. That really is what they're getting into. And so they probably picked the wrong word, frankly, when they decided to say that they were going to be reinventing productivity, because it's not the way that everybody in the industry thinks of it. And it's certainly not the way that the consumers would think of it. Consumers, when you say productivity, they think my boss is on my butt and I better start working harder. Maybe Microsoft can help me. And that's not what they're talking about necessarily. It includes it, but it doesn't encompass it. And so I think that, but to your specific question, it's tough. And that's, I mean, you know, for as much as everybody can sit back and be a Sunday morning or Monday morning quarterback on Microsoft, I mean, you're exactly right. It is very tough to both pare down and become efficient and also have your fingers in enough places that you don't miss the next big thing. And it's a huge challenge. And, you know, I guess that's why they pay them millions of dollars to figure it out.
Well, let's go ahead and talk a little bit about those tough decisions, because the first of the tough decisions involves Bing. Mary Jo Foley, what's going on?
Yeah, so we were all thinking when we read the tough choices memo that Todd published that one of the places that might be first to get the tough treatment would be hardware. But instead, it was Bing. And, you know, Bing has been such a whipping boy at Microsoft. When they first got into the search business, everybody was like, wow, you're never going to unseat Google. It's impossible. Everything they did was either ridiculed, from the name to the mission statement of Bing. Everybody was like, it's never going to work. Just give up. They sunk millions, probably billions of dollars into building Bing. They had to go out and build data centers and do marketing campaigns and hire a bunch of people who knew all about the search business. And they had to establish an advertising business to go along with it. Bing, I think for at least the last 10 years, has lost money. Every quarter, they've lost money. And it was interesting this week because we saw a Microsoft executive say, Bing actually is a multi-billion dollar business for us that's making money. I actually think they haven't yet hit break even, or they just have hit break even within the past couple months after 10 years. So, you know, it probably was one of those things when Nadella and the senior leadership team was looking at where can we make some cuts, Bing probably came up. So instead of just laying off a bunch of people at Bing, what they did was kind of a complex transaction with AOL, where they are moving somewhere, we think around 1,000 or so Microsoft employees over to AOL. And that's going to help them get out of the display ad business for the most part. So AOL is going to take over selling display ads, and Microsoft instead will just be focusing on search ads. So that was part one. Part two, I understand a little less, and maybe Todd understands this part more.
This is Microsoft, the programmatic advertising?
I was thinking about Uber. Yeah. Uber. So Microsoft, I guess, sold off part of Bing's mapping assets and 100 of Microsoft's own employees to Uber. Now, this one I'm a little less, I don't see the logic as much as I see on the display ad business. Display ad business is kind of a very competitive business that Microsoft didn't really feel like they belonged in. But do you really need to be in the business of collecting map data yourself if you want to be in the mobile business? That's a part about this I'm not as sure about.
Yeah, that is a really good, yeah.
I think they're going to like buy or I don't know how you get mapping data. I guess you buy mapping data from other first party companies that are collecting it. Like Nokia, right? Nokia with Here Maps. I guess that's how they're going to get map data now for their various properties.
But to your point, it doesn't seem core to the function of providing a search engine or doing search ads. The idea that you have engineers out there collecting mapping and imagery and all that sort of stuff. And I think this is probably the model that you're going to see Microsoft take with everything, where they're not cutting complete business lines, but they're trimming off pieces of it that don't really make sense with their own functions. You know, and especially if you look at to the original story about AOL, the notion of Microsoft being a, you know, display advertising company, that's just not their strength. It's not their historic strength, as they discovered and experienced with the Aquantive acquisition. They didn't even know what to do with that. And I think that really that you're going to see these trims and these adjustments within units versus wholesale exiting of businesses.
Yeah. I think with this trimming, Bing actually does become profitable. They said back in 2004 that Bing would be self-sustainable and profitable by fiscal year 16, which we're now in fiscal year 16. Mm-hmm. And in getting rid of the display ads and in seeing that advertising revenue on the search ads rose 21% since that statement, I think, you know, that idea of shedding off the pieces that they just added because they were reacting to something in the market and yet have not turned a profit does now make Bing a profitable enterprise. As hard as that is to believe, they may actually see black this year.
Yep. Yeah, going back to Uber again, though, I the part I'm not sure about is, do you need to be in that business if you're... Because I guess the reason I'm asking this is maps are so key when you're in the mobile space, when you're a mobile operating system vendor, as we've seen with Apple and Google, right? You have to have really good maps. It's something very important when you're doing local searches. I guess the way they're going to get around that is to buy mapping data from other parties. But the question is, should they actually continue to be in that business? They've decided they're not going to be in the business of collecting mapping data. And how do you get around that?
You know, I think with Apple Maps in particular, you've seen the difficulty of really the whole mapping business in general.
Yeah.
And I think you've either got to be fully in it and you've got to be a leader in it, or you've got to turn it over to somebody else. And so it seems like Microsoft has made the latter decision here. The other interesting twist to this is that Uber currently uses Google Maps in their app. And obviously, with this change, presumably they worked out a deal to where Bing Maps would replace that, or at least the branded Bing Maps would replace that. And so you can see Microsoft taking advantage of the fact that it's not competing potentially with Uber. If you look at a lot of Google's moves in driverless cars and that whole technology, you can see Uber and Google being somewhat at odds down the road, no pun intended. And that is a position that Microsoft can sort of be the elder statesman of the industry and say, hey, we're going to work with you and not against you.
Right. And the same thing was true with the AOL deal, by the way. part of the deal people didn't really focus on is, in addition to shedding the people and having them go to AOL, Microsoft is replacing Google Search in those AOL properties. So it, by doing these two things, even though they shed employees and it looks like they're paring back, they actually might end up growing their search share by doing what they did, which is an interesting kind of reverse.
One of the things that has been plaguing the Silicon Valley of late, but actually really through its history, is the whole not invented here syndrome. And this actually gives me hope for Microsoft that they're looking at partnering with existing services, with companies that can provide something that they don't have to reinvent. They never should have been in the mapping business. They probably never should have been in the display ad business. Do you see this as this is part of the fewer, bigger bets strategy? In other words, we're not going to reinvent everything just so we can say we made it at Microsoft. If there's a partner out there that we can share revenue with, that we can share a service with, we'll go that route rather than spending X amount of money to build something that we don't even know is going to make us that money back.
Yeah, definitely part of the fewer bets, for sure. You know, the other part about Bing that I think we who follow Microsoft very closely, we realize this, and people who use a lot of Microsoft products realize this. Bing is way more than just a search engine. Like, people who don't follow Microsoft that closely, they're like, Bing, oh yeah, they've got what, like under 20%, and Google has all the rest. You know, why are they even in that business? Well, the part they forget is Microsoft's building Bing into everything, right? Cortana is Bing, pretty much. So every Microsoft product that has search incorporated into it now is drawing on what they've built with Bing. So Bing to them is almost a whole platform as much, if not more, than it is a search engine. And I think that's why they're not dumping Bing or getting rid of search. They're staying in the search business. They're staying in the business of building search capabilities and assets. But they're not just going to be in all the entire search space just for the sake of being everywhere that Google is. You know, I always say Microsoft's not trying to be Apple anymore. Well, they're also not trying to be Google anymore. And that's good, I think.
Yeah, to your point, Mary Jo, aren't there aspects of Azure that are exposed, or essentially Bing data sources that are exposed to developers to use in third-party apps? Isn't that,
yes.
Isn't that the way that works? And so to your point, Bing is bigger than a search engine, even though folks out there, average people, probably don't even know what it is. And if they know what it is, they think it's a search engine only. There's a lot for Microsoft to play with there while staying in the market.
Quick question to the group. Who here has Bing as their default search engine? And that's been mine for the last 3 years.
Wow, really?
Yeah, and every search starts with Bing. I will sometimes go to Google, but my best searches always come from Bing.
Interesting.
Well, I've left it as the default in Safari on my iPhone. Does that count?
Well, actually, since it's on your iPhone, absolutely, yes.
Okay, it counts. Definitely. Yeah, and on Windows Phone, it's my search engine. But on my laptop, no, it's not. I use Google. And on my phone, on my Windows Phone, it's built in, so I use it. But a lot of times in New York, going back to the whole local data thing, a lot of searches in New York on Bing don't come up with the correct result or the most current result when you're looking for like local businesses or up to date, you know, has this closed? Is it open? Kind of information. So I have a Google tab open at all times, pretty much on my phone.
We're getting a mixed response in the chat room from people who either say Bing is crap or saying, yeah, I use Bing. Actually, one of the interesting things is, how many reward points do you have? I don't even actually hear, Alex, you could throw this up here. I currently have 5,663, and that, I think I've redeemed maybe 5,000 points over the last year or so. So, I mean, I do use it a lot. This is my default. I just open up my browser. This is what pops up. And it's interesting because I understand that when Bing first came out, it did not give the best results. And Mary Jo, as you said, it's not great for local businesses. But most of the searches that I do, Bing's going to give me a much better result for the first page than I get from Google. And maybe that's just what I'm always searching for. I'm always looking for arcane knowledge. But But yeah, occasionally I'll jump over to Google to see what compares. But I've actually been very happy with Bing. Maybe I'm just silly and I don't actually know what a search engine is for.
No, you know, I think you're totally right. It depends what kind of searches you're doing, right? Like when I'm searching for Microsoft related information, obviously Bing gives me better results. If I'm looking for people's titles or job postings or whatever, Bing is definitely much more plugged into the Microsoft world. When I'm doing something like a search for a business, a local business, it doesn't give me the results I want. Right. So I think it just depends on what you're looking for.
Yeah, Padre, do you end up switching back ever? Do you ever feel like the results you're getting are not up to par?
If I can't find what I'm looking for in the first page, I will never go to the second page of Bing. Then I'll jump over to Google. That doesn't always fix it, though. And I think actually now that I think about it, like Mary Jo, it's normally when I'm looking for a local business that Bing's not locating it properly. But as far as finding academic sources or sources that I trust for stories that I'm trying to research, Bing is almost always better. In fact, there was a while there that I was doing side by side and I almost never chose Google sources over Bing sources because the Google sources were filled with so much junk, just stuff I would never look at in a million years. And that tended to get filtered out of Bing after, a week or two of searches.
Yeah. I think the other interesting dynamic here is the renegotiation of the Microsoft and Yahoo search agreement, which in a lot of ways was another example of not trimming through cuts, but by looking essentially at what Microsoft was doing under the Ballmer regime and rethinking it and, essentially shifting the core competencies of Yahoo back to Yahoo and of Microsoft back to Microsoft. And I think that's very consistent in hindsight with what we're now seeing Satya Nadella do with these two moves with Uber and AOL. It's interesting, too, to see what he's doing in the groups that he formerly led, Bing among them. He was the Bing engineering leader for a while there. I think that in some ways you're seeing what Satya would have done when he was leading those groups if Steve Ballmer hadn't been the CEO at the time with some of these moves.
That's an interesting thought.
Yeah. I think the Ballmer dynamic was even more overbearing, perhaps, than it even looked from the outside. I think Steve Ballmer, in a lot of ways, was a micromanager. I've heard stories about things that happened with the original Windows 8 start screen and things that went on in some of those internal meetings where it was literally adjusting icons. Like that was the subject of the meeting with the CEO, like where the different tiles would appear on the start screen out of the box in Windows 8. I mean, that is not a CEO level decision normally.
Jobs type thing, almost.
And it might have been more appropriate for Bill Gates back in his heyday to have been doing something like that on the product or engineering side. But I think you've sort of seen, it's almost like, hey, the kid Satya has left the house and he's going to college and he's learning stuff and he's doing all the things now that his parents wouldn't let him do when he was, down in their basement.
Wow. Satya in the basement.
I think we're going to leave Satya in the basement for now. We're speaking with Mary Jo Foley and Todd Bishop from GeekWire. We're going to be talking about Microsoft hardware next. Do they stay in? Do they get out? What's the future of Windows Phone? But before we get there, let's go ahead and take a break and talk about the first sponsor of this episode of Windows Weekly, and it's Harry's. Now, let me ask you, do you have a good shave experience? Well, of course you don't, because nobody likes shaving, because shaving is a chore, right? I mean, it's not just the act of shaving. It's not the fact that you have to go through that rigmarole of making sure you're smooth before you lather up, before you put on your aftershave, before all of those things. And really what I hate is the process of getting the shaving equipment. Have you ever gone to a drugstore and found the razors locked behind the equivalent of forked knocks? You have to get an attendant over to open them up because they're afraid you're going to walk away with the gold that is your $20 pack of razors. Well, you could do it that way. And if you do it that way, I understand why you don't like shaving, because shaving isn't a good experience. But you could make it a good experience with Harry's. Now, Harry's understands that you want a complete experience. That means having a kit that you actually enjoy using. That means having the right creams and the right salves. It means getting the service that you want so that you don't have to wait in line over and over again. Now, Harry's puts the fun. They put the experience back into the shaving. Razors are expensive, but not if you get them from Harry's. And Harry's understands what it takes to make a quality razor. They did their research before they started this company, and they found out that there were really only two factories in the world that make high-quality razors, so they bought one. And because they own it, it means that they can make their own high-quality razors, and they can sell it to you at a price that you want to pay. Now, Harry's engineers all their own gear. And because they make their own blades, it means they can do it efficiently, and they can do it so that it's perfect for the product that they sell to you. And they ship it directly to your door, so you'll never have to worry about standing in line. Harry's guarantees your satisfaction, and in every kit you get a razor with a handle that looks and feels great. You get three razor blades and a foaming shave gel that just feels wonderful. The Starter Truman set is an amazing deal, and you can get it all for just $15. I've been using Harry's for a while now, for almost a year. It gives me a clean, close, comfortable shave. In fact, I didn't use it this morning, and I can feel it. My face is all scratchy, and I felt off my game. And it's because I come to enjoy that 10-minute process of lathering up and then just feeling my cares slip away under a Harry's blade. I love the look and the feel of my set. It's actually attractive. It's something that I like to leave out. And I love the price because Harry's costs half as much as the razors that I get at the store. They also have a new aftershave moisturizer that protects and hydrates my skin so I don't have to worry about razor burn or those little bumps that you get when you shave wrong. I'm telling you, Harry's has experience down and they want to share it with you. Go to harrys.com and get $5 off your first purchase with the code Windows. That's Harry's, HARRYS.com. And enter the code Windows at checkout. We thank Harry's for their support of Windows Weekly. Mary Jo Foley, Microsoft is a hardware company, right?
Kind of.
So what happens in the future? Is this kind of hardware company going to stay a kind of hardware company?
You know, I think they are going to stay in hardware to an extent. And the reason is they need some really good devices to showcase all the things that Windows and Office can do. On the Windows Phone front, though, you know, I've seen so many articles in the past couple of weeks just stating as a fact, like, well, now that Microsoft's making some tough choices, that's it. Windows Phone is dead. I don't think that is actually going to be what happens. I think they do have some tough decisions to make around Windows Phone. And I definitely want to get Todd to talk more about his idea on flagship phones and that's possible switch. But I don't think they can get out of Windows Phone right now. And the reason I don't think they can is who will be the white knight for Windows Phone if they get out? Right now, I forget what the exact number is, but something like 95 or 97% of all the Windows phones being sold in this country are made by Microsoft because they're Lumia phones. If Microsoft gets out of that business, who is going to step in and be the new champion of Windows Phone? They have a bunch of OEM partners. They are signing up more and more of those, but they're not making those kind of devices that you'd want to call showcase devices other than HTC. I think HTC is making some nice flagships, but I don't know. I think as long as Microsoft says they're going to be a player in the mobile space and they are building Windows 10 Mobile to be a player in the mobile space, I don't think they can get out. I think they have to stay in.
Todd, what about that? I like this idea of flagship phones. I'd love to see a flagship phone, but let me play devil's advocate for a second here. Why not get out of the phone business? It obviously hasn't done as well as Microsoft would have hoped it would have done. It doesn't have market penetration. It's almost negligible when you compare it to iOS and Android. Why does Microsoft need to stay in mobile devices?
A couple thoughts here, and I tipped my hand a little bit earlier, but I do think, and I agree with you, Mary Jo, I'd love to disagree just to create some conflict on the show, because isn't that sort of Paul's recipe, right?
It is.
Yes, so you're totally right. I do think that they're going to stay in Windows phones to some capacity. And I should say that my theory on the flagship devices and focusing there versus the low-end devices is purely that. It's a theory. But I think it makes sense if you look at it in the context of things. On the market penetration question, that I think they just need to stop playing that game. I think that they need to pay zero attention, at least in the short run, to their market share versus Android and iOS. I think what Windows Phone needs to become is an example, and Microsoft needs to use it as that premium experience to show other hardware makers what can be done. And in some respects, that's what they're trying to do with Surface. That's essentially where I think they need to take Windows Phone as well. And the challenge here is if they exit this business completely, I mean, that is just such a black mark. I mean, think about the Nokia story in that context. I mean, that is one of the worst business case studies ever. I mean, you send your own lieutenant over there to run the company. And, I mean, this is the caricature that would come out. You send your own lieutenant Elop over there to run the company into the ground. You know, he runs it into the ground and you buy it for billions of dollars. And then, you know, less than 2 years later, you shut it down. I mean, what a horrendous story that would be. And I don't think it makes sense for Microsoft from a PR standpoint, but I also don't think it makes sense for them from a business standpoint. I think they need those showcase devices. And then lastly, I think they need to be in phones, even if they're not number one or number two, simply because phones then lead to the next thing, which is the Internet of Things. And if you're not in phones now, you don't have a great presence in the Internet of Things down the road.
Yep, agree. I mean, once you say we're not making phones and then you leave it up to your OEM partners and they so far are making low-end phones, right? You're like, okay, yeah, if you want cheap devices, and there is a huge market for those cheap devices, but it just kind of takes away your presence and your credibility. And for the people in, especially here in the U.S. who want to have a flagship and show off a flagship, and it's like, this is why it's cool that you have a Windows Phone. I don't know. There's not that much of a compelling story at that point. And then once you don't have a phone OS, what about, you know, because Windows 10 Mobile isn't just a phone OS. It's also going to be for small tablets and phablets. So if you get out of phones, then are you getting out of that too? Are you also going to exit that business? Because that's the operating system, right?
There's been a fascinating dynamic on the Microsoft campus that I've noticed over the past year, as Microsoft has been much more open about this notion of making cross-platform apps and embracing iOS and Android. You see far fewer Windows phones being pulled out. In fact, I don't know if you've experienced this, Mary Jo, but the most Windows phones I see are from Microsoft's public relations folks. So they're sort of like the last to make the leap back to iOS and Android. And frankly, I think you can look at that as something of the litmus test. Is Microsoft making Windows phones that are appealing enough for its own employees to jump on board? And I think once they start doing that, that's the first step. And then they can start to reach the broader market with those premium phones.
Yep. I like the idea of Microsoft not paying attention to penetration numbers, because that sounds very much like what Apple did in the 90s and early 2000s, which was, look, we don't care what percentage of people are using the product. We only care that we're offering a premium experience. And the people who are cultured enough and the people who are intelligent enough will use it because it's a better experience. Damn be the penetration.
Yeah, the Mac analogy is very appropriate. Very appropriate.
It is. No. It is, except for one thing. Who owns those customers who are willing to pay the premium? Apple owns them,
that's
right?
True. That's right. Not Microsoft. That's right.
I know. So the question is there a group of people like us who are not Apple users? Well, Todd is, but I'm not. And, you know, is there a group of people who are willing to pay the premium price, want the premium device, but haven't already bought into the Apple ecosystem?
Yes, there is. There is? There is. Yeah. It's all the kids playing Minecraft right now, which there is now go. A Microsoft product. Yeah. So in 20 years, Microsoft will be the premium brand, right? I mean, that's what we're hoping for.
Yep. That's a very good point. Another big move by Satya Nadella to bring that on board. I thought that was a signature move of his so far in his tenure. And if you look at E3, apart from the backward compatibility announcement, that they made for the Xbox One. If you know, one of the big pieces of show-stopping news, there was the initial demo of Minecraft for HoloLens. And frankly, you know, that it's worth noting, those HoloLens demos are, frankly, they're spectacular. I mean, if you look at the way those come off on stage and the way they pulled off that reveal of Minecraft for HoloLens, it was remarkable. And it's the kind of thing that Microsoft has historically struggled with to really show the true experience of its products to people who aren't using them. And so I think there's a lot of inroads here for the company, and they've got the tools and the assets to make all this work. It's just a matter of executing on this.
But Todd, everyone in the tech press is talking about how HoloLens is so disappointing now. And I, of course, I'm saying this facetiously. I'm hearing so many people saying, oh, well, HoloLens it's horrible because you only get to see this much. And I'm thinking, this is a first generation product and nobody else has done this. Literally no one else has this kind of technology. This came completely out of the blue from Microsoft. It is a very next generation type of product that when they iterate, I could just see being an incredible thing. I mean, the world of AR has so much more profitability than the world of VR that I can't understate how much I think that's a huge product, even though two of the prototypes did explode on the last launch. It's still incredible.
This is I sense an Elon Musk. Yeah, an Elon Musk conspiracy theory from the show. You know, I have not tested out the most recent prototypes, the HoloLens prototypes, but I was there at the Windows event. I think you were there as well, Mary Jo, at the one in January, and I got to test it out. You know, the field of view thing, I don't think that's a big deal. Honestly, it's not immersive. So it's not immersive, and you get used to that. It's still a remarkable experience.
It's really the ones they had demoing at Build. It was way, way reduced field of view from what we saw in January.
Oh, really? Oh, yep. Okay. So does that then indicate the state of the shipping product or the future shipping product?
Yeah, like they've said on the record now that the final product is going to be very similar to what they showed at Build, and field of view on that is like kind of a mail slot size instead of what we saw, you know, which was quite a bit bigger in January.
Okay.
But it's still incredible.
I mean, it's cool.
This idea you can look around and can see things overlaid on the real world. That was the promise of Google Glass that it never delivered on. And Microsoft did it and nobody knew they were working on it.
Well, we kind of knew, right? We knew about Fortaleza, which was the predecessor, and the whole business plan on that leaked. And that's what HoloLens was. And then they decided to expand it beyond gaming, which was the original plan for Fortaleza. It was just a gaming headset.
Yeah. And of course, you know the backstory of you probably better than I on that, because doesn't Alex Kipman name all of his code names are after cities in Brazil?
Yeah.
So that's why we all probably should have known at the time that truly was legit.
Yeah, so. That's a good point. Yep.
Sorry.
But it is really cool. It is. And you know, the question again becomes, as armchair quarterback type people that we are, when is the right time to launch it? Do you wait until you can make it better? Or do you just say, you know what, version one, here it is. The field of view is not fantastic, but it gives you guys a head start. People want to develop and try it out. And they seem to be going that route, the route of just like what they did with the Microsoft Band, get out a generation one product. It's not perfect, but it gives people something to start thinking about and developing against. And then maybe generation two will be better.
What is the assumption on timing at this point? Is it fall of 2016? Is that the general target?
Yeah. All they've said publicly is in the Windows 10 timeframe. And now that Windows 10 is the quote last version of Windows, that could mean anything, right? So we don't know when they haven't given us even a year. They haven't said a year or anything. So
right.
Let's go ahead and talk a little bit more about Microsoft hardware rumors. We know that Microsoft is, as Mary Jo said, a hardware company, kind of. I mean, they have sold game consoles for the last 10 years. They have products in tablets and in mobile. We know that they're looking at next generation products like the HoloLens, and that's all going to require manufacturing capability, and it's all going to require the ability to make custom silicon. So let me throw this out to you. Should Microsoft, relatively easily, by the way, since this company has a market cap of only $1.8 billion, buy AMD.
Mary Jo, it's all yours.
I know. So, I don't know if you guys have seen this rumor. There is an active rumor out there. And I don't know if you guys know the source, Kit Guru, KITGURU.
I'm looking at the story now. I had not heard of this site before, but that doesn't mean anything.
Me neither. I've never heard of this site either, but a couple days ago, they posted an article saying, you know what, Microsoft's been bidding on, or at least talking to AMD about buying them. And it just is kind of stated out there as a fact, like, hey, they've had negotiations and, you know, Microsoft could pay this and here's the market cap. And I don't know where this information came from or how real it is or not real it is. They said Microsoft did not comment on the story. I don't know. I have trouble thinking about Microsoft buying a chip company. They make their own processors for a number of things. They make the processor themselves in the HoloLens, I believe, the holographic processing unit. That is a Microsoft-made chip. And I think they do use AMD processors in the Xbox, possibly.
Where's Paul Theriot when you need him?
I know, right? And so the argument is they could save like $1 billion a year on the chips inside the Xbox if they bought AMD.
No. That's not how it works. So if you buy AMD, you buy their fabs, which will not only be manufacturing Microsoft chips. I mean, Microsoft doesn't need as many chips as a fab can turn out. So you now inherit the problem of filling the line. So what do you fill the line with? Do you fill it with AMD processors, mm-hmm. which aren't selling really great right now? Or do you fill it with graphics parts, which are doing better, but still second fiddle to NVIDIA? Do you partner it out? And now you have to think about, well, AMD is actually a couple of generations back of where Intel is as far as manufacturing capability is concerned. So do you now spend, on top of the $1.8 billion that you just used to buy the company, billions and billions of dollars to upgrade all the machinery that they have? I mean, talk about fewer, bigger bets. This is the exact opposite of fewer, bigger bets.
Right. Like, they don't even want to be in the phone-making business, really. Like, that was the rumor, right? That Ballmer really wanted them to buy Nokia, and Nadella wasn't on board. But then he said, okay, because he was on the senior leadership team when that decision was made. And then what's the first thing they do once they get Nokia on board? They close a ton of the factories. They lay off a bunch of the people who worked in the factories, and they're like, we don't really want to run all these phone plants. Do they want to run a chip plant? I don't know. Doesn't seem like it fits with what else they're doing to me right now.
Yeah. And yes, Microsoft will need custom silicon. And like everybody else, they'll have it manufactured overseas, somewhere in China or Taiwan, where they've got chip fabs that are just ready to turn things out. You just give them the design, you give them the fab, you do a couple of months of quality assurance, and then you get your run. And that's far more economical than owning the machinery and the building to do it.
Oh, okay. Two people are saying right now on Twitter, two of our listeners, that AMD doesn't actually own fabs anymore.
I was thinking about that. I think they had one down in Texas.
Sold them to Global Foundry, one person says, J-Hack. And then somebody else says, not only the Xbox One, but the PS4 both use AMD chips, which is interesting.
If I remember correctly, they sold the fab, but part of the agreement was they still get to manufacture their chips there. So Microsoft would be inheriting that.
Yep.
It's still not a good deal.
Yeah, it seems like in a lot of ways it would be more of a talent acquisition, which is an odd thing to do when you've got such a, obviously not the number one player, but a major player in the chip market. It seems like it would be an odd move for them to make.
Yeah. I mean, Microsoft does hire a lot of people who are chip experts. Like if you ever go on their job site and look for some of the openings around hardware, they're always hiring people who know a lot about processors, and they need that because they're building things that have processors in them, and they're building software that runs on processors. So it makes sense. But I don't know, just buying a chip company when you're saying your core competency is software and services, I'm not sure that fits in the new Microsoft. But I have to say, I have no firsthand knowledge if they have talked to AMD, if they've bid on them, or if there's anything to that rumor. I have not heard it. I don't know anyone of my contacts who's heard it directly.
It actually sounds more like a geek's fever dream Like, whoa, wouldn't it be cool if Microsoft bought AMD?
Yeah.
Okay.
I will say, though, I've learned to pay at least somewhat more attention to random bloggers I've never heard about. After my experience, our experience at CES this year, there was a teenager on the bus coming back from one of the press events who was insistent that Microsoft was getting into 3D holographic headsets. And wow. We went, yeah, whatever. Who's your source? You know, and lo and behold, he was right.
Yep.
Well, folks, how about this? Let's move away from hardware rumors into the realm of something that we know is imminent, and that is the release of Windows 10. There are a bunch of juicy bits of news about Windows 10, and actually, that's really why we brought Todd in here, because Todd's got the inside track on everything Windows 10. Todd, could you tell me about...
Are you being sarcastic, I hope?
No, not at all. Microsoft is going crazy with the builds this year, this week. I mean, is this what we're going to see? They're just speeding it up?
It seems like, obviously they're getting very close to the final build, to the final release, and I guess they've already done... Has RTM already happened, Mary Jo?
No, RTM has not yet happened, all I hear.
Got it. There was a succession of releases, one right after the other. And did they determine what the one change was in the second release? It was was it the background, the Windows desktop?
I think
desktop?
It was the new wallpaper, yep, and the sign-on experience. That's what changed between 10158 and 10159.
Yeah. What do you think of the wallpaper? Are you going to keep it on Windows 10 when it comes out?
You know, I forget this guy's name. There's a guy who made a version of this wallpaper that has the window with the light coming through it. But he has it with the unicorn with the cat on his back. You know, little fun thing that the Windows team is using as their mascot, kind of.
Wallpaper?
I'm like, oh.
Yes,
that's the real wallpaper. That's the one that Microsoft spent a lot of money and time and had designers involved with. That's their new hero, as they call it, their hero image.
It was approved by the psychology department. This should bring out the right amount of angst and expectation.
I like it. I don't dislike it. I think it's kind of cool. It's interesting.
It's very cool artwork, but as you said, I'm thinking of probably the millions of dollars they spent to design this. Oh, so Alex gave me this before the show. This is the latest build of Windows 10 loaded on, this is the original Surface Pro, Alex? Yeah, and it's not bad. You know, it's nice and snappy, and it does everything I've expected out of the Windows 10 builds. How close is this to what we'll get in RTM, Mary Jo?
We're getting pretty close. I would think they would have to RTM probably within the next 2 weeks at the latest to be ready for July 29th. So this build that came out yesterday, 10159, has over 300 new bug fixes since 10158. So they're now into the fit and finish and getting the bug fixes down, getting the branding all aligned. So this actually uses the Edge branding instead of Project Spartan for the browser now.
It does do the automatic switching on a convertible device.
Continuum.
So, yeah, the continuum. Yep.
Although, continuum's getting better.
Let's see if it switches back. Yeah. It's even polite. It asks me. So it's got its own version of Clippy. How about that?
Right. There's some new Cortana integration in these new builds that came out back to back, so that now if you're in the first release program on Office 365, you can actually hook up Cortana to Office. So you can say things like, when's my next meeting and who's going to be in it and what files do I need to bring? So that's making Cortana more interesting to people in the business world, I think.
WP Sensei in the chat room is asking, Mary Jo, if you know of any talk of the new build of Windows 10 Mobile in the latest release.
Yeah, so they're getting closer in build numbers with Windows 10 Mobile and Windows 10 for PCs now. So they're bringing those more into alignment. The last Windows 10 Mobile test build that we got was last week. I think it was Thursday or Friday. It was 10149. And that one also changed the branding of the browser from Spartan to Edge. And so they're getting closer, but you know, Windows 10 Mobile is not as far along the development path as Windows 10 for PCs is. So they still have a lot more work to do on the mobile side than they do on PCs. In fact, the mobile build still doesn't run on many, well, I don't think it runs on any non-Lumia phones, or very few, if any, at this point. So they still have a lot to do there on the mobile side.
Oh, I do want to talk a little bit about a product that I'm very interested in. Visual Studio 2015 is going to RTM on July 20th. Mary Jo, is this the build that actually includes a developer environment for Internet of Things? I remember they had one that you could actually program Arduino devices in directly inside of the IDE. Is that this, or is that still an add-on?
I don't know the answer on that one. I know that this Visual Studio 2015 is supporting a lot of cross-platform development. So this, you know, there's all kinds of hooks with Unity and Cocoa and Unreal, like all different ways of developing games and other applications for iOS and Android when you're using Visual Studio 2015. But I'm not totally sure on the Arduino stuff if this is that. It probably is, I would think.
Yeah, I think they want that in there before you get Windows 10 for the Raspberry Pi and such, because that would just make sense.
It would make sense.
Although,
right,
I'm not sure if I should be asking that.
Why?
Well, making sense.
Oh. Yeah. Sometimes things make sense.
Sometimes.
Yeah. The part that's not going to be ready by July 20th is, you know, at Build, they talked about all these bridges they had for helping people develop Windows 10 and Windows Store apps from other environments. So if you were an Android developer, how you could bring your application more easily over and make it into a Windows 10 app. Those three of those four bridges are not going to be ready in time for July 20th, but they'll be probably sometime soon after that. So the iOS one is not yet ready. The Android one's not yet ready. And the one for bringing Win32 apps is not yet ready.
We've also got some news about Surface Pros.
Yes,
yeah, that was Surface, some big news today. Yeah.
So today's news was Surface 3, the Intel-based tablet that's the little sister to the Surface Pro 3, is going to start being available in new models that have built-in 4G LTE. And we knew this was going to come. We just didn't know when. Right now, it's the Surface 3s with built-in 4G are available in Japan through Y Mobile. And starting July 3rd, they're going to be available in Germany and the UK. Then they're going to be expanding that to France and Spain. And they've got specific relationships with various carriers in those countries. So Deutsche Telekom in Germany and Orange Business Services in France, O2 in the UK, and Movistar in Spain. We don't know when this is going to be, quote, turned on or available in the U.S. yet. We know that the first two carriers who are likely to have devices are going to be T-Mobile and Verizon in the U.S. They'll be supporting the 4G LTE model of the Surface 3. I would think that would be fairly soon. And the price differential is slightly over $100 more for the base device if you want a Surface 3 with the built-in LTE, then of course your contract with the mobile operator on top of that. But you know, Microsoft always says no one wants the built-in LTE device, the devices with LTE. They said, not really big sellers, and that's why we never introduced that for a Surface Pro 3s. But I guess I just have a lot of readers who really care about that combination, because I always hear from people like, I would buy a Surface if it had the built-in LTE.
Oh, yeah. If you had Microsoft announce the LTE for the Surface Pro 3, I think you would have a moment very similar to the Xbox backward compatibility announcement, where at the very least, people, to me, that seems like one of the most in-demand features for the Surface Pro, just based on anecdote. Now, presumably Microsoft is basing their decisions on data. So hopefully,
not just hopefully making it up off the top of their head.
Yes, not like us. But the other big announcement today, at least from my perspective, was the new SKU for the Surface Pro 3, where you're going to be able to get the Core i7 at a smaller storage level, 128 gigs, for a cheaper price than you would have had to pay for the Core i7 in the past. So I think they're making some tweaks. The question for me here is, you know, where is the Surface Pro 4? I mean, what is the latest on that? Honestly, the things have been changing so quickly there in terms of what's being reported that I don't know what to believe anymore. And I don't know, I don't have any info from inside the company on that particular topic. Do you know that, Mary Jo?
Yeah, we get asked this all the time. Like, okay, so where's the Surface Pro 4? That's the machine I want. And you would think now that Windows 10 is almost done that maybe we'd be hearing more about where it is, because one would assume it would come preloaded with Windows 10. Neither Paul nor I has heard anything about the Surface Pro 4 other than very vague rumors. Nothing from inside the company. No one I know has said they've got one or seen one. So my bet is, maybe this is more of a fall thing. You know, we know that Microsoft's going to have some bigger update to Windows 10 this fall. I keep hearing October. So that to me seems like it might be a possible time, you know, just before holiday, when you would want to have a flagship device running your flagship operating system available for sale. But again, I've seen various kind of weekly sourced reports about what the processor is and the specs on it and what it's going to look like and how big it's going to be. So I don't have any real data to share right now on that.
So what will be the flagship devices on July 29th? You know, you've seen like HP come out with a few things that they're showing, but without Microsoft coming out with a new Surface or something like that, is this just going to be about people upgrading their existing machines to Windows 10? And then in the fall, they're going to be talking about the actual new hardware?
That would be my guess. I think if there are new devices this summer, maybe that's Microsoft just giving the stage to the OEMs and saying, you know what, we'll hold back the next Surface and you guys bring out your showcase devices. And, I think right now they're in the mode of trying to repair their relationships with OEMs after really destroying them with Windows 8 and the Surface originally. You know, it could be a case of them waiting and giving the OEMs a bit of a wide berth, or it could just be, you know, when more of the hardware will be coming out this fall in time for holiday, and that the July 29th date is more just about getting the first wave of people upgraded on their existing devices and just kind of let all the bug reports trickle in on that and make adjustments to the product and then have that ready to go by fall.
Now, Windows 10 is a big enough announcement that you don't really need to support it with any hardware releases. Although, like you, Mary Jo, I'm not hearing a whole lot from the channel about hardware releases, and that's what makes this release of the new SKU for the Surface seem so strange. And they now have three SKUs for i7s, two for i5s, and one for i3. And as you said, we've already heard rumors about the Surface Pro 4, but the fact that they're releasing a new model now tells me that it's at least going to be 6-7 months before they even think about releasing the 4. With no major hardware revisions, are they just assuming people are going to buy what they have now, but with Windows 10?
Maybe.
It's not really exciting.
I know. Their back to school thing was Surface 3, and a lot of people think back to school means you have hardware in the channel in September, but actually back to school hardware in the channel is usually summer. It's usually June, July, you know, because people are starting to buy things as graduation gifts for people going on to college or high school or whatever. So I think that was their big push for back to school. And a lot of the OEMs have been doing back to school launches recently that were not Windows 10 machines, just Windows 10 ready machines. So maybe it is a case of all the big hardware comes this fall and it's all holiday.
And it's not excess inventory, because you wouldn't release a new SKU if you were trying to dump all your old inventory.
Yeah.
But with the RTM timing, I mean, in years past, hasn't Windows, like the RTM, the release to manufacturing for major versions of Windows, been much further ahead of the actual release of the OS or the public date for the actual release of the OS. I mean, it seems like it would be impossible at this point for hardware manufacturers to do anything significant with the actual final bits, wouldn't it?
I don't know. the way they're developing Windows so differently now. OEMs are getting so many more builds, and it's very much more in the public eye. Like, we all know we're pretty close to where Microsoft is internally with the builds right now. So I feel like because there's less secrecy and less regimentation around the scheduling, maybe the OEMs are kind of more in the loop, so that when the final bits do come out, it's just going to be a quicker test period. And hey, here it is. Plus, you know, we have the whole new servicing model with Windows. So even if you give them the RTM bits, they put that on a new machine. When you first boot that machine as a customer, you're probably going to get a whole ton of updates coming down to your machine. So that's kind of the new way that works. You don't have to wait nine months or a year for Service Pack 1.
Yeah. Okay. Got it. Yeah. And I guess maybe part of my thinking here is informed by, you know, being around too long and remembering Windows Vista. So I guess that's probably forever scarred by covering that launch.
I think we both have been scarred by covering that.
Although it did lead to the greatest headline of my career, which was man gets Windows Vista to work with printer. So hopefully they can avoid that on Windows.
Look, Vista was a perfectly good operating system once you turned off everything that made it Vista.
Yeah. User account control, you mean?
Oh, that was the first thing to go, right? Of course.
Yes.
Mary Jo, do we have any listener Q&A?
We can, if people want to ping us on Twitter or chat room. Anybody?
Yeah, I saw a good question in chat. The question was, and sorry to jump in here, but it was, at what point should you upgrade friends and family to Windows 10? Like, how quickly are the bits that good that you could that it would pass the mom test? Mm.
Good question. Or the dad test.
The dad test, yeah.
It depends on what they're running right now.
Yeah.
It does.
I have an aunt who was running Windows XP. She's already got the upgrade. Even though it's not released yet, it's still better than what she was running. But, you know, if they're perfectly happy with Windows 7, I wouldn't feel the need to push them. If they're on Windows 8, I absolutely would push them. I mean, that's just my family. I know the technical skills of my family. And if they're happy with 7, I'm probably not going to move them. If they're on 8, they're going to love 10.
You're not going to move them at all off 7?
Probably not.
Wow,
it would be too much of a hassle to move. The relatives I have on 7 who have learned 7 would just be thrown into confusion by 10. If they've learned enough about 8 to be annoyed by 8, then they're going to love 10.
I agree with you on 8. Like, I can't wait to put Windows 10 on my Windows 8 laptop. But on 7, I'm kind of thinking from, and I should say, and I've said this on the show before, I have not run a single Windows 10 test build. I have remained pristine. So on July 29th, when I try it, that's going to be my first time trying Windows 10. But from everything I've seen and written and looked at and read, I'm not really nervous about it being so unfamiliar to me as Windows 8 was.
In a lot of ways, Windows 10 is what Windows 8 should have been. I think everybody is largely in agreement on that. So both my parents, I believe at this point, are on Windows 8. And I'll definitely be encouraging them to go to Windows 10. It just makes a lot more sense. They're on desktop machines. You know, they struggled with Windows 7. Actually, I'm trying to remember if they might be still on Windows 7, in which case I'd probably encourage them to go to Windows 10 anyway, because it just seems like it's time. It seems like it's time to move up.
Have you seen the latest numbers from NetApp showing that Windows 7 share has risen to over 60% because people are buying 7 specifically so they can upgrade to 10. It's a much cheaper upgrade path.
Yes, it is.
Although I don't know how much longer it will stay cheaper once people realize what's happening, the price of Windows 7 will go up. That's just how it's going to work. So if you've got XP right now, XP or Vista, and you really want to try 10, now is the time to buy 7. That's just confusing.
Yeah, the market share went up 3 percentage points just over the past month for Windows 7 and just a little bit for Windows 8.1, which I think is the ultimate commentary on Windows 8.1, or at least people's perceptions of it, because, you know, they're not upgrading to the current thing. They're upgrading to the prior thing to be able to get the new thing. And that's not a great commentary on Windows 8.1.
No.
Not, absolutely not. Although... kind of like Vista, I I don't hate Windows 8.1. In fact, for what I do, a lot of video editing, Windows 8.1 is far more stable than Windows 7 was. And so it's good for me. I turn off everything that makes Windows 8 Windows 8. I don't like the interface. I don't like the GUI. But the kernel has been so much more stable for me. So when I hear the hate, I understand it, but I don't feel it.
Yeah, for me, the turning point was, I forget exactly when they enabled the option to essentially skip the start screen on boot. But that was the turning point for me, when I could actually use it like a desktop machine on my desktop and not have to fight all of the tablet features. You know, when Windows 8.1 actually reached that point, maybe it was the shift from 8.0 to 8.1 that they did that at. That for me was, if they had come out with 8.1 at the beginning, I think it would have been a much different conversation. And I think those market share numbers would actually be very different right now.
I bought my mother a laptop, an Acer, and I had it set so that it went straight to the desktop. And that's how she used it. And she started freaking out. She'd call me up and she said, something happened to my computer. I think I have a virus. And what had happened was she was accidentally hitting the Windows key and it was popping into tiles and it freaked her out. So I actually disabled that key on her keyboard and she uses it just in desktop mode. So I'm thinking, oh, that's actually that's the perfect commentary. Tiles, virus.
I have a question from somebody on Twitter. Marvin is asking, what's the latest news about the Windows RT update? So, you know, if you have a Windows RT tablet or PC, you know you're not going to get Windows 10. Microsoft has said they are not going to be able to upgrade you to full Windows 10 at all. So what they have said is there's going to be some kind of an update that includes some subset of features of Windows 10 that you will get when you're on Windows RT. This past week, they published a Q&A on a Microsoft website that said this will be happening right around the time of Windows 10. So that's the first time we've had a tentative date. So it's going to happen sometime around July 29th, I guess. But we are asking what is in the update, and they still will not comment. So we don't know what the subset of features is and the exact date when you'll get that.
I don't have a question here, but I do have a tweet that was sent to me from our TriCaster, who is telling us that, yes, Bing is used. The TriCaster has 18,244 lifetime credits. So I guess, if you convert that into gift certificates, that's like $160 worth of gift certificates. So that's not bad.
It's about a penny a point, I think, is what you calculated.
What else?
And
the
real question, we got Rich Woods asking, is Satya Nadella secretly Batman, Todd?
I think John Ledger is filling that role here. John Ledger, the T-Mobile CEO, for folks who don't follow that whole world. Wow. Yeah, he's certainly come in and seen the signal and followed it, I guess. I don't know. I'll go with your analogy, Rich.
I'm still very hopeful. I mean, I know that the honeymoon is over and people are starting to look at his decisions and whether or not they're actually good for the company. But I do feel like that this reorg is a different reorg. Right, Mary Jo? I mean, do you get that sense? This is an actual reorg. This is not a paper reorg. This is people leaving the company who have been lifelong employees. This is organization charts within Microsoft, not just shifting around on paper, but people actually answering to different managers. There's a lot of initial pain, but he has been very much Batman-esque, right?
Yeah, he has.
Well,
I'd like to see him in the cape, but no cape so far, just hoodies.
So the one thing that we haven't talked about so far on this show, and I think you talked about it last week, was the combination of the Windows and Devices groups under, why is his name escaping me?
Terry Myerson.
Yeah, Terry Myerson.
You're like that guy who's now the head of Windows.
Yeah, like the second most important guy at the company. his name is escaping me. Yeah, no, but Terry is obviously somebody that I think if you looked at it 4 years ago and you said, hey, who's going to be basically running Windows and hardware? I don't think many people would have pointed at Terry. And I think it's one interesting nuance here that obviously Satya Nadella must see something in him that perhaps other folks haven't. And so I think that's one really interesting dynamic to watch is how that all comes together. it would have seemed unlikely even just a couple of years ago.
Right. He was running Windows Phone a couple of years ago. He was the head of engineering for Windows Phone. Right. Then they made him head of operating systems. So he was running Windows Phone and the Xbox operating system. And now he owns all that. Plus he owns all the hardware. So he also oversees Surface, HoloLens, the Lumia line, the Surface Hub, the Band, and Xbox. He owns all those products on the engineering side now.
Yeah, plus Windows. I mean, you could make the argument that he's the most powerful person inside the company apart from Satya at this point.
Now, you know who I actually think is the second most powerful person? You're going to laugh maybe at my choice, but it's Qi Lu. Because...
Okay, make a case.
Yeah. Because the most important division at Microsoft right now, I would argue, is applications and services. And the reason I say that is that's the division that is home to everything Bing, right? Plus Office, all the Office products, plus SharePoint, Exchange. What else is in that division? It's just a huge division. And with the focus now at Microsoft on productivity and services and software, I feel like that division is really, really key to the success of this. As Skype is in there too. And I just feel like it's also the biggest black hole for us who watch Microsoft, that we don't really have a lot of good visibility into what's going on there.
Oh, that's a really good point. I wouldn't have thought of Qi, but you're absolutely right. It's it spans all the important stuff in a lot of ways, and it's where Microsoft is headed. I went to the opening of the it's a whole other story, but there's a new thing that Microsoft is funding. They're putting $40 million into a collaboration between the University of Washington and Tsinghua University. And the folks right there up at the front were Qi Lu and Brad Smith and Satya Nadella. I mean, it was very much a show of force. You know, Terry Myerson was not there. And that's the kind of stuff where the people who show up, who they purposely tap to bring to those kinds of events, there is some meaning there.
Yeah.
It's always the quiet ones you have to watch for.
It is. Right. He doesn't make many public appearances, Qi Lu. He doesn't like to talk to the press. He kind of just does his thing. Everybody says he has the craziest hard work ethic and gets a lot of stuff done. I mean, he's the guy in charge of Office on iOS, Office on Android. I mean, he's got a ton of things in his domain, and he's just kind of like the quiet guy who gets it done.
Coming up next, I want to talk about our tips, our picks, and maybe a few little bits and pieces that we need before we end the show. But before we do that, let's go ahead and take a break for the second sponsor of today's episode of Windows Weekly. Let me ask you a question. Are you looking to hire? Because if you are, you do understand that the people that you hire are the ones who are going to make your business what it becomes. You can't have a good business without good employees. The question becomes, how do you get those good employees? Oh, you could do it the old-fashioned way. You could put a posting in the newspaper or maybe up on a job board. Let's say you're part of the digital era. But does that get you the candidates that you need? Does it get you enough people that you can actually sort through and find those folks who have not just the skill set you need, but the right temperament, the right culture? Because that can mean the difference between success and failure, which is why we're happy to have ZipRecruiter as a supporter of Windows Weekly. Now, ZipRecruiter understands what you have to do to get those quality candidates, and they understand that you're competing with other business for those quality candidates. What they allow you to do is to post once and automatically have your job posting posted to 100 plus different sites with one click. And you can be instantly matched to candidates from over 4 million resumes. I'll just post once, and within 24 hours, your candidates will roll into ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. No more shuffling of calls, no more stacks of paper. You look, you find, and you choose. Now, ZipRecruiter has been used by over 400,000 businesses, and you can try it now for free. Getting the right people for your company is so important. Don't put it off. Do it the right way. Do it with ZipRecruiter. You can try ZipRecruiter today with a free 4-day trial and get your perfect candidate before he or she is snatched up. Your business depends on the people that you bring into your company. Make sure you're bringing them in with ZipRecruiter. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/windows. That's ZipRecruiter.com/windows and get your next hire today. And we thank ZipRecruiter for their support of Windows Weekly. Oh, Mary Jo Foley, I'm a little rusty. I haven't been on the show with you in a while, but the tip of the week, it's supposed to be something to show knowledge to the folks who might be running Windows, yes?
Yes, or just a tip on anything that somebody in the Microsoft ecosystem might be interested in.
Okay. Well, I'm going to throw one in here because this is actually one that I use on a daily basis. At least I use the effects of it on a daily basis. Do either of you run multiple monitors in Windows 8?
I do not.
Okay. I actually do. I do.
There was something that really bugged me a while back, and that's when I upgraded to 8.1. Windows does a really good job of stopping your mouse at the border if it doesn't think that the resolution matches up to the monitor next to it. And I actually run this really strange monitor setup. I've got a big 42-inch 4K monitor in the middle, and then I've got a bunch of 1080p displays on either side. And every time I hit that border, I actually had to do like a second run with the mouse in order to break past it. Well, I found a really quick hack that gets rid of what I call sticky windows. If you've been using Windows 8.1 with multiple monitors, then you've probably noticed that Microsoft has changed the way that it allows the cursor to move between screens. Before, you could just easily glide from one screen to the next, but Microsoft has locked in the cursor so that you need to have a little bit of speed in order to get through that border. Otherwise, it will just bounce. Believe it or not, this is actually a feature that makes sense. Microsoft wanted you to have an easy way to snap windows inside each display, and that's what that hard border does. But if you're used to the way that Windows 7 treats multiple monitors, it can be a bit jarring or downright annoying. Unfortunately, Microsoft really doesn't want you to mess with the settings that would change the hard border. Fortunately, we don't care what Microsoft wants. To fix your sticky windows, you'll need to use the Windows Registry Editor. That's some pretty powerful mojo, so I'm going to take you step by step. In fact, it's so powerful, I'm going to remind you again of how powerful it is in about 24 seconds. Hit the Windows key, then start typing REGEDIT. You should see an entry for regedit.exe. Right-click the entry and choose Run as Administrator from the drop-down menu. The Registry Editor window will now open. We're going to be editing registry keys. These are the configuration settings for the OS. Let me repeat, this is powerful mojo, so be very careful in here. The registry controls the way Windows works, and changing the wrong settings can make your OS completely unresponsive. Follow these instructions step by step to avoid borking your installation. First, find the key labeled HKEY_CURRENT_USER in the left column of the editor. Click the triangle next to the key, and a new set of folders will drop down. Now select the triangle next to Control Panel, then click the folder named Desktop. You'll see multiple objects in the right-hand column. Scroll down to the one labeled Mouse Monitor Escape Speed, all one word. If that entry does not exist, then right-click in an empty area of the right column and create a new D-word value with the name of Mouse Monitor Escape Speed. Double-click that entry, and a screen titled Edit D-Word will open. Set the value data to 1 and leave everything else the way it is. Click OK. Moving back to the left-hand column, but staying within the HKEY_CURRENT_USER key, click the triangle next to Software, then Microsoft, then Windows, which should also open Current Version. Then click the triangle next to Immersive Shell. And now click the folder titled Edge UI. In the right column, you'll again see entries. You need to find the key labeled Mouse Monitor Escape Speed, all one word. But again, if that entry does not exist, and this time it probably doesn't, then right-click in an empty area of the right column and create a new Q-word value with the name of Mouse Monitor Escape Speed. Double-click that entry, and a screen titled Edit Q-word will open. Set the value data to 1 and leave everything else the way it is, then click OK. We now need to restart Explorer so that the new settings will take. You could just restart Windows, or you can hit Control-Alt-Delete to bring up the Task Manager. Find the task labeled Windows Explorer and click the Restart button in the Task Manager. The UI will refresh, and Windows Explorer will restart with the new settings. Now, when you move your mouse between screen borders, there should be no hard border, no sticky windows. Be free, run wild, and experience the power of the registry hack. What could possibly go wrong with you doing a registry edit?
I know. I was just listening to that going, okay, this is not for the faint of heart.
It really is.
That is hardcore, man.
Yeah, if you're not comfortable with RegEdit, don't do that. Actually, what you can do is jump over to the know-how episode where I first showed that, and I do a step-by-step. Just follow exactly what it says in the step-by-step. Because, yeah, you can bork your registry really quickly. It works, though. I mean, that was one of those things that was just bothering me. Because, yeah. I mean, as long as the mouse was going quickly, it would break through that border. But, you know, every once in a while, I was just moving slowly, and it would just kind of hang along the border of the window. And you figured that would be something that they would just have, you know, a button in the resolution settings to say, don't stop me at the border. But, oh well. So that's my tip. My tip was a bit... probably more than what we normally have on Windows Weekly, but dang it, it's important.
So I've got one I can talk about. I don't know what the structure is here, but I'm happy to jump in. I'm wearing my Microsoft Band, and I think a lot of folks looked at the initial features of the Band and perhaps dismissed it, or they weren't able to get one, so they might have dismissed it. I've actually been really enjoying it, not for the running or the heart rate tracking, but for the bike app, the cycling app. You know, summer's here and it's been actually just fantastic in terms of the ease of use and the whole notion that you can just essentially, let me get that into the monitor there. Oh, wow. I'm playing with my, delay and my, there we go. And so you basically just do it and get running and or get going. And it's very easy to just hit the trigger and, make it automatically find the GPS, syncs extremely well to the iPhone and to the Microsoft Health app. For me, this has been the killer app on the Band, the very accurate way of tracking your bike rides, your cycling rides with the device in a way that is a little bit more nuanced and detailed than you can on just your phone.
You know, Todd, I've had a running app on my Band for months now, and I have not lost any weight because of it.
What about golf? Do either of you guys use the golf app?
So the golf app has not yet been released. It's been announced, but not yet actually rolled out for the Band. I heard about just about 6 days ago that it would be coming sooner than they expected. This is their partnership with TaylorMade, where they're actually going to be able to count your strokes. I have our in-house golf expert, one of our reporters, Taylor Soper, is standing at the ready to take my Band to the course as soon as this comes out. So we're prepared.
Wait, Mary Jo, do you golf?
No. God, no. This is why I don't have a Microsoft Band. I don't bike here in New York. I used to bike when I lived in Seattle. I don't golf. I always kiddingly tell them when they have the Untappd app synced to the Microsoft Band and yeah, I can track my beers. I'm all over that.
Actually, we have breaking news here from our TD Alex. He has found information about golf.
Well, what so is this? the my Microsoft Health app got an update today, and I think it enabled the golf thing.
Oh, really?
In the manage tiles part, where you manage the tiles on your Band, there is a golf setting now.
Okay,
nice.
So that might be it.
Might have broken some news here.
So, Mary Jo Foley, you will now need to pick up golf.
I know. I guess I will.
Either that or just drink more beer.
Just drink.
Exactly.
Is there a beer app for the Microsoft Band?
No.
Not yet.
Not that I know of.
They're missing out. Huge market. All right. Mary Jo Foley, did you have a tip or a software pick?
I have the enterprise pick of the week.
Oh, even better.
Yep. So Microsoft has been doing a lot of work around Skype for Business, which is the rebranded name of Link. It's their unified communications product for business customers. And today, July 1, they launched technical previews of three new Skype for Business services. So if you want to be in the technical previews, you either have to be an Office 365 Enterprise customer or a Skype for Business Plan 2 customer. And the three services are all very interesting. They're all going to be available commercially by the end of this year. One of them is Skype Meeting Broadcast, which is a service that lets you bring up to 10,000 people into a large virtual meeting. So if you want to do a town hall style meeting or a public webinar, this is the service you would want to be testing. They also have one called PSTN conferencing, which means, you know, the plain old telephone network conferencing. So if you're a Skype, if you're in a Skype for Business meeting in Office 365, you can bring in people who just dial in using a landline or a mobile phone so that you don't have to have Skype for Business actually on your device. And then there's another one called Cloud PBX with PSTN calling. And this lets people who be able to make and receive traditional phone calls inside of their Skype for Business client. So all of these are now available in preview. Only the one for the large meeting broadcast is available worldwide. The other two are US only right now. And if you're an end user, you can't sign yourself up for this, but you can contact your Office 365 administrator and ask them to sign you up if you want to give it a try. So that's my enterprise pick.
Nice. We've been playing with a bunch of different versions of Skype, and Skype for Business looks pretty good. They had it at NAB, and I got a chance to play with the meeting broadcast.
Yeah, that's the one. That's the one that just went into trial. Yep.
And the quality is great, and the lag was minimal. So
nice.
More power to them.
Yep.
What about the code name pick of the week, Mary Jo?
So code name pick of the week, because today is Canada Day. Not sure how many Canadian viewers and listeners we have, but today is Canada Day. So I wanted to go with a code name that had a Canadian connection. So this is going to be a little counterintuitive, but my code name is Goa. So you're like, what does that have to do with Canada? Well, Goa is a code name for a program that Microsoft Canada started. It's an initiative where they're trying to get people building games to use Azure. And there's a whole website about if you can build a game using Azure and they'll give you all this assistance. And there's all these kind of milestones that you pass. It's all, if you search for Project Goa, you'll find this. But I think you have to be in Canada or a Canadian-based company to participate. And you have to submit your apps by October 18th this year to be in the contest for Microsoft to evaluate your game and win some kind of a prize. Or I forget what the end goal is. Yeah, there are prizes. The grand prize is $10,000 plus a trip to Microsoft Game Studios in Vancouver. Not bad.
Canada always gets all the coolest stuff first.
They do.
I'm tired of that happening. Now we've come to the part of the show that is interesting for me because I actually don't drink. But recently, thanks to some of the folk here at the studio, they've been trying to tell me how, well, wonderful the world of beer can be. And I'm not just talking about drinking to excess. They've been trying to explain the different flavors and the different types of brews. Mary Jo, how do I get into beer?
Well, there's many ways, but I'm a big craft beer fan, as people who listen to the show know. And people who listen to the show also know that Paul likes craft beer as well, but he does not like hoppy beers. He's not an IPA fan. So given he's not here today, I was like, let me try to sneak in a pick that Paul probably would absolutely hate, but that I like. So I'm, of course, going with an IPA, and I'm going to do for my beer pick today, if you wanted to try something and you were not sure about getting into craft beers, I'm going to pick Stone Enjoy by 7415. So Stone Brewing in Southern California makes a whole series of beers they call Stone Enjoy by. They date them with different dates, and this is the date they're the freshest by. And since the 4th of July is coming up, and this beer will be the freshest if you drink it by July 4th, I figured this would be a pick. I've had it recently, and if you like very hoppy IPAs, especially ones that have kind of a grapefruity tinge to them, I think you would really like this beer. And it's available all around in six-packs and in bomber-sized bottles, and would be nice to bring to a cookout, I think. It would be really good with something spicy like barbecue sauce, whatever. Tofu pup with barbecue sauce would be lovely with this.
I think you've lured me in with that, but I just have to ask one question. What does it mean when you say a beer is hoppy? I don't get that.
Yeah. So hops are one of the four main ingredients in all beers, and hops are flowers. And when you smell hops or taste hops. It has a very astringent, bitter taste. But if you like that kind of a flavor and smell aroma, it smells really good to you. If you don't, then you do what Paul does when I hand him a hoppy beer. You just spit it out.
I like new experiences. So it has an earthy taste. Is that it?
Yeah, kind of more bitter, you know.
Okay.
I'd say more bitter.
I like that. I'll try it.
Yeah.
Padre, I know, you know, you asked originally how you get into beer. And as a graduate, a proud graduate of California State University, Chico, I happen to be an expert in this topic. And I have two words for you. Keg stands.
This is something I need to look up, right?
Yeah, look it up. Okay. I recommend
it. Is this
it.
Something I could do on our DIY show?
Certainly. Certainly. I think there might be a registry hack for this.
Uh-oh. Or as the chat room is saying, it's Padre, it's not how you get into beer. It's how the beer gets into you.
Exactly.
That's the important part. You've been listening to Windows Weekly with Mary Jo Foley. Of course, Mary Jo Foley can be found at the All About Android blog at ZDNet.
Hey, 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 hey.
Oh, wait, no.
Wrong show, man. All About Android?
Wow.
Mary Jo, do you have an announcement?
Did that just happen? Actually, you know what? I think I did that the last time you were on, too. Every time I hear All About, I'm just thinking Android. Of course, it's not All About Android because she's on the real operating system, All About Microsoft. Actually, I think we were sitting right here, and he was right there the last time I did that.
He was. He gave you the evil eye right over the transom again.
Of course, Mary Jo Foley at the All About Microsoft blog on ZDNet. Mary Jo, where else can people find your work? I mean, that's where I go. Anytime I need to find out about what's going on in Microsoft, I jump over to your blog. I find your latest article. But if they wanted to follow you even further, what could they do?
They can follow me on Twitter, at Mary Jo Foley on Twitter, where I tweet many things, including beer. Or if you want to follow me on Untappd, if you like craft beer, I'm MJ Foley on Untappd. You'll see me. I have a cute cat face there and many badges.
Fantastic. And, of course, we were joined by Todd Bishop from GeekWire. Todd, you have already been nominated as having the godlike voice in chat room, so... and people have actually asked if you can become the permanent third co-host Windows Weekly. So
I am a mere poser in the world of Windows Weekly. I'm just warm in the chair until Mr. Thurrott gets back.
Well, very, very good. Very well done with the warming indeed. Where can people find your work? Of course, they're going to want to go over to GeekWire to see you, but they can follow you on Twitter. Where else do you have your social outlets?
So geekwire.com and at Todd Bishop on Twitter. I'd also encourage, actually, we've got our radio show on Cairo Radio here in the Seattle region that airs on 7 p.m. on Saturday nights and 1 p.m. on Sundays, as long as the Sounders, Seahawks, or Mariners are not playing at that time. But it's available as a podcast. My colleague John Cook and I talk about everything from Microsoft to Amazon to John's 30-year-old Honda on this show, and it's a fun one. So it's on Stitcher and iTunes and basically anywhere else you can get a podcast. So I'd encourage you to tune in.
Pleasure to speak with you. You know what? I'm going to have to ask you to come on to one of our other shows. I've got This Week in Enterprise Tech. I'd love to have you as a guest the next time we talk Microsoft.
Yeah, anytime.
All right. Of course, you can find Windows Weekly every week, Wednesdays at 11 o'clock a.m. Pacific time. live.twit.tv. Watch us live, and as long as you're watching live, jump into the chat room at irc.twit.tv. You can give us real-time feedback. You're in a screen right below the stack over here, so we can find out what you're thinking about what we're thinking, and then we can tell you what we think about what you think about what we think. It's part of the interactivity that is Twit TV. Don't forget that you can also find our shows on our website at twit.tv/ww. That's Windows Weekly. If you go there, you'll be able to subscribe to our show so you can get our content into your device of choice each and every single week. You can get the audio version, the video version, the high-definition video version on your iPhone, your Android device, your laptop, desktop, Mac, PC. No matter what you want, we'll find a way to get it for you because, well, we love you. Finally, we'll see Mary Jo Foley and Paul Thurrott back soon, and Leo Laporte will be returning from his expedition overseas. But until then, I'm Father Robert Ballas here, thanking you for joining us for Windows Weekly.